Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for the second TCN virtual desk side briefing. This is Josh Berry from ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. I'm going to turn things over to our TCN moderator, Dawn Berkowitz. So, Dawn, please take it away.
Thanks so much, Josh, and good afternoon to everyone. I am Dawn Berkowitz, and I serve as the chair-elect of the Tobacco Control Network Executive Committee, and I'm also the director for the Center for Tobacco Prevention and Control at the Maryland Department of Health. On behalf of the TCN Executive Committee, I'm so happy to welcome all the TCN members and partners joining us this afternoon for what is the second installment of our TCN desk side briefing series, in which we convene brief audio-only presentations to provide technical assistance without overly contributing to virtual meeting fatigue. So again, this is just audio, no Zoom camera that you have to worry about today. So with that in mind, I hope everyone has the opportunity to just relax and listen in on today's presentation, which is State Tobacco Policy Updates from ASTO, Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, and the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kits. Just another quick logistical overview. We're going to be recording this briefing so we can share an archive of the presentation, and that will be available through the Resources tab on the TCN website, and also we'll mail it out through our TCN News. We ask that all participants keep themselves on mute for the rest of this briefing to eliminate the possibility of background noise. But please know that you can utilize the Zoom chat function. ASTO staff and presenters will have access to that. So if you have information sharing or discussion and any questions you want to submit to our speakers at any time, you could use that. So with that, I'm excited to turn it over to our first speaker this afternoon, is Mr. Andy Baker White. Andy's the Senior Director of State Health Policy at ASTO, and in that role, he provides legal and policy expertise across a wide array of state and territorial public health priorities, including, of course, tobacco control. Thank you, Andy, for starting us off this afternoon, and I am turning it over to you right now.
All right. Thank you, Dawn. Good afternoon, everyone. As Dawn said, I'm the Senior Director for State Health Policy here at ASTO. And one of the things that my team does is we provide the legislative tracking for ASTO members, their staff, and our internal staff here at ASTO. And one of the topics that we do follow is tobacco control. And within that, we look at a number of different policy strategies that legislatures can take, such as tobacco 21, flavor restrictions, price increases, and so forth. And so I'm here today in the next few minutes, and I'll just share kind of some of the things that we saw over 2020 that happened in the legislatures across the country on the topic of tobacco 21 and price increases, so the taxation angle, and then also share a few tobacco ballot initiatives that that folks in a few states will be actually voting on next week around tobacco control. So, you know, if you think back a year ago, at this time, we were really in the thick of dealing with some states that had issued emergency rules or emergency declarations around youth use of vaping products and Evali cases. And then as we moved into December of last year, at the very end of last year, the federal government decided to adopt legislation that raised the minimum age of sale of tobacco products from 18 to 21. So when we ended last year, we really thought that 2020 would be something to really watch for tobacco legislation at the state level. And then I think, as everyone knows, February came around, and then all we talked about was, and what we've been dealing mostly with since then has been the coronavirus. But we did, you know, kind of see some activity at the state level on tobacco. So I'm just here to share kind of what we did see as far as Tobacco 21 and the price increases. So for Tobacco 21, we actually did see quite a number of states actually adopt at the state level, also raise their minimum age of tobacco sales to 21, just as the federal government did at the end of 2019. And, you know, so the federal government's action, while it didn't require states or territories to also raise their minimum age of sales law, the new legislation is going to require states that receive federal substance abuse prevention and treatment block grant funds to revise their age requirement for retail compliance inspections under the SINAR amendment. So it seems like that kind of nudge from the federal government has really caused, at least this year, to cause a number of states to go ahead and raise their minimum age as well and align their law with the federal requirements. So in this year, we saw actually 15 states adopt new laws that raised their minimum age of tobacco sales to 21. And so this was adding to the 20 or so other jurisdictions that already had that requirement. And actually the last one that we've seen so far was at the beginning of this month, Nebraska raised their minimum age to 21. And it's a little interesting with Nebraska because it was only last year in 2019 that Nebraska raised its minimum age to 19. So it's, you know, kind of, again, kind of really interesting to kind of see how federal law can really push state activity. As far as taxation, in 2020, we saw two states pass new bills or new laws raising taxes on tobacco products in Utah and Wyoming. Also in this year, in June of this year, was when the law that Massachusetts enacted toward the end of 2019, which imposed a 75% excise tax on nicotine, e-cigarette, and vaping products, that increase in the excise tax went into effect in June. So we saw a couple of states actually raise the prices for e-cigarettes, and we saw Massachusetts, their new law actually go into effect. And what we've been seeing, and we've been seeing this over the past years, following that states, what they're doing is they're applying a percentage price increase based on the sales price at some rate, either at the per milliliter or per liquid or of nicotine or consumable material. And then finally, what we're following, and we'll actually have an update on this the week after the election, we'll be having a health policy update looking at not only these initiatives, but other ballot initiatives that deal with substance use, including marijuana. In Colorado, Oregon, and Oklahoma, they have ballot initiatives this year on tobacco issues. So in Colorado, there's a ballot to incrementally increase their cigarette taxes. That would be raising it to a total of $2.64 by 2027. And also what that ballot initiative would do is it would also put a new tax on nicotine products such as e-cigarettes. And then in Oregon, there's a measure that would increase taxes on distributors of tobacco products and e-cigarettes. And the revenues from that new tax increase would be used first for the administration and enforcement of the tax, and then any of the funds that would be left over would be dedicated to the Oregon Health Authority. And that would go to medical and healthcare assistance programs such as including mental health services, tribal health providers, and other programs concerning tobacco and nicotine health issues. And then the third ballot initiative in Oklahoma that we're following this year is dealing actually with the Master Settlement Agreement and the funds that that state receives from the Master Settlement Agreement. Currently, what happens is that 75% of the amount that Oklahoma gets from the Master Settlement Agreement is deposited into the state's Tobacco Settlement Endowment Trust Fund, which goes to tobacco use prevention and smoking cessation programs. This ballot initiative, if it passes, what it would do is it would require that only 25% of the amount from the Master Settlement Agreement go into the tobacco fund, and then with the remaining 75% being deposited into a fund that's subject to legislative appropriations, and that money is supposed to be directed to for Medicaid match funding. So those are things that we're that we'll be following. And again, we'll be reporting out on those tobacco initiatives as well as others shortly after the election. All right, so Don, I think I'll turn that back over to you and let you introduce Caroline.
Great, thanks so much for those important updates, Andy. And yes, now I'm pleased to turn the floor over to our second speaker this afternoon, Caroline Gonsalves-Jones. And Caroline's the Director of Advocacy and Outreach at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, where she works with tobacco control partners like ASTO, TCN, and countless others to advance tobacco control policies at the state, federal, and local levels. Thank you, Caroline. The floor is now yours.
Thanks so much, and thank you all for having me today. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all about some of the work that we're doing at Tobacco-Free Kids, and primarily our work to prohibit flavored tobacco products, because that's really been our charge over the past year or so. So I kind of wanted to start first with the new youth tobacco survey data on e-cigarette use that was released in September, which I'm sure you all saw, which had some good news that we decreased youth e-cigarette use down to 19.6% from 27.5%, but you know, that's really not that great of news, because we're still at epidemic levels of youth e-cigarette use. That's about the same level as in 2018 when we first saw the youth e-cigarette epidemic. So our work has really tried to see how can we keep these products out of kids' hands. And another thing that was kind of released in that survey that reiterated kind of our work was that most kids are using flavored e-cigarettes. Among current youth e-cigarette users in 2020, 82.9% use flavored e-cigarettes, which was up from 68% in 2019. And the most popular flavors were fruit, mint, menthol, and candy desserts or other sweets. So that's really what we have been focusing on, because that's what we know is the best way to keep kids away from these products, is to remove the flavors from them. And so that, of course, means flavored e-cigarettes, but we have also seen an opportunity at TFK with the momentum behind working to reverse the youth e-cigarette epidemic to also advance other public health priorities related to flavored products. So that includes flavored cigars and menthol cigarettes as well, which are huge public health initiatives. Cigars are more popular than cigarettes among kids, and come in hundreds of flavors. And as you all know, the popularity of menthol cigarettes among youth, more than 50% of kids use youth smokers smoke menthols. And of course, 85% of African American smokers use menthol. So in the opportunities that we've had to prohibit flavored e-cigarettes, we're trying to move along a whole agenda of flavored tobacco products, because we think that is the best way to reverse the youth e-cigarette epidemic and continue driving down youth tobacco use. So again, directly relating back to that youth survey data that was that was released in early September. I'm sure you all remember this past January when the administration put out their policy on flavored e-cigarettes. And there were two pretty big, there was a number of holes in that policy. But the two biggest ones that we kind of saw in the new data was that kids have shifted dramatically to disposable e-cigarettes, which come in all types of flavors, as well as menthol e-cigarettes. So those, what that tells us is that, you know, if flavors are left on the market, kids will move to them. So because we just saw gigantic shifts to those products because they were cut out and specifically kind of given exemptions in that administration policy. So in the absence of action by the FDA, who could act on these issues immediately, we have pursued legislation at the federal, state, and local level to prohibit tobacco products. At the federal level, we did pass a bill out of the House of Representatives in February that would prohibit all flavored tobacco products, but there's really no chance in the Senate. So that's another avenue we'll pursue next year. But where we've really seen our success over the past year is in the states and localities. Over the past year, we have increased the amount of, you know, Americans, 25% of the population is now covered under policies that prohibit or strictly limit the sale of flavored e-cigarettes. Before a year ago, that was about at 3%. So we've had significant success in doing that over the past year. And we only are going to continue that in the rest of this year and next year and the years to come. So kind of going over some of the big wins that we've had over the past year, in November of last year, November 2019, Massachusetts became the first state to adopt a ban on all flavored tobacco products, which covers about 6.9 million Massachusetts residents or over 1.3 million youth. Boston previously had its own restrictions, so they were already a leader. But yeah, Massachusetts became the first state and is really an example for other states moving forward. And then in January of 2020, New Jersey adopted a law to ban the sale of all flavored e-cigarettes. In March of 2020, Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo ended the sale of flavored e-cigarettes by making permanent her emergency order. And then another big one was in April 2020, the New York legislature and Governor Cuomo agreed on a state budget package that included a ban on the sale of flavored e-cigarettes. So that covers 19.5 million New Yorkers, including 4 million youth. And then most recently, and pretty significantly, is in late August, California became the second state to adopt a law banning both the sale of flavored e-cigarettes, menthol cigarettes, and flavored cigars. There are two exemptions to that California law, which would allow for the sale of flavored hookah as well as flavored premium cigars, but overall a really strong law. Unfortunately, the tobacco industry has already is trying to overturn that law. They currently have a proposal for a referendum, which they're collecting signatures on. Should they get the right enough signatures by the end of November, they would be allowed to have a ballot initiative to overturn the law, which wouldn't go onto the ballot until November 2022. And that would mean the law in California would not go into effect this coming January, as we hope, but instead, possibly not for another 2 years, which is really unfortunate. But we are closely watching the action in California, and we'll continue to pursue local pieces in California should the state law be delayed due to a ballot initiative. Kind of looking forward this year, you know, we have campaigns in DC, Kansas City, Denver, and Phoenix to prohibit all flavored tobacco products. And then next year in 2021, we're looking at, you know, Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, among other states as well. So there's a lot of activity going on, a lot of activity we'd love to engage you all on. If you're interested, please reach out to me at Tobacco Free Kids, and Josh and folks will share my contact information. We'd love to share information or see how we can get you engaged as spokespeople or as supportive of campaigns, op-eds, LTEs, any way you'd want to engage, because we do see this as kind of the fights that we have to pursue, given the absence of regulation at the federal level. I will say that should there be an new administration next year, there would also be potential opportunities to pursue an avenue at FDA to prohibit some of these products. But again, in the absence of that, we are moving forward with state, local, and federal legislation. So that's, please reach out with questions and happy to answer any questions now too.
Yeah, this is Esther Chamarella. In Chicago, with the flavor things, menthol, it was out of the question. So can you elaborate something, what happened in Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago was super unfortunate. We tried for a very long time to get menthol cigarettes in Chicago. And then there was it happened pretty quickly and over the time during the pandemic. So what Chicago wound up doing was prohibiting flavored e-cigarettes. But we were supportive the entire time of trying to get menthol cigarettes as well. It's just the council there was not supportive of it. That is our charge always, to try to get all flavored tobacco products. But in Chicago, it just wasn't a possibility.
What is the future to insist on this? Because I was in the discussion list, and it was amazing that business, it was over health, in particular with the COVID-19 and the minority communities. And it's amazing that it was more power, the power of the money for tobacco than the solution for public health. So
I totally agree with you. And we have said, you know, we said their next step needs to be now to prohibit menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars. So what they said is they were going to act now on flavored e-cigarettes. And then we at Tobacco Free Kids and with our partners said, you know, the next step is you need to crack down on menthol cigarettes. This is a good first step, is prohibiting flavored e-cigarettes, but you are in no way done. And we are no way done there too.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, Caroline. We, as you mentioned, in Maryland saw a flavor ban bill, including menthol, last year. And I know we're going to be looking at that again in the year to come. And thank you, Andy, too, for your presentation again. We already received one question. We do have the rest of the time for Q&A. And to moderate that, I am going to turn it over to Josh Berry, who's the Senior Analyst for Chronic Disease Prevention at ASTO, to moderate that. And Josh, it's all you now.
Thanks, Dawn. Thanks, everyone. Thanks again, Andy and Caroline, for your presentation. So yeah, I'll be looking to the chat box if folks have any other questions that they'd like to pass along to Andy or Caroline. I'm going to start off with a question for Andy. Andy, based on the trends that you observed and gave us an overview about in terms of tobacco policy activity at the state level in 2020, what kind of tobacco policy efforts do you expect to see state legislatures take up in the 2021 legislative sessions when those get kicked off in the coming months?
Sorry, Josh, just trying to find my unmute button. So I think I think we'll continue to see action on flavor restrictions. I think we're primed and ready to see activity on those, and then we got knocked off our feet by coronavirus. Every year we've seen, you know, action around price increases. So I think we'll continue to see that. And that we could possibly see more activity around price increases as states look for ways to perhaps fill budget gaps or that have been caused by the COVID-19 outbreak as well. So again, I think those two, you know, flavor restrictions, price increases, and then just dealing, you know, more with e-cigarettes as an issue.
Terrific, Andy. Thanks for that response. There's a question in the chat box that I'd like to turn over to you, Caroline, first, and then also check in with Andy if Andy can add. Caroline, do you at TFK have any resources or talking points for flavor bans and restrictions that could be shared with the group, especially ones that have a health equity focus?
Absolutely. We can share anything you need. So we have a number of resources of fantastic fact sheets from our research team. We can also provide specific talking points to your state if you're particularly interested in that. And yes, we absolutely have stuff from the health equity focus as well. So I'll send those along to Josh to get them out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Caroline. Yeah, we'll be following up with everyone attending and registering for this desk side briefing later this week with a follow-up email with any materials that Andy and Caroline are able to pass along to us, as well as their contact information for further questions. So we'll be sure that that all gets out to you. Andy, anything to add from the ASCO side of things in terms of specific talking points for flavor restriction policies?
Not currently, Josh, nothing on my side right now. I know last year when we were dealing with some of the policy implications, we were working on some policy reviews, but I'm not sure if that's kind of in a share mode at this point.
No problem. I just thought I wanted to check in. So another question that I'll turn to you, Caroline. So it's great that TFK has resources that you're able to share on the flavor restriction piece. Based on the campaigning work you've alluded to that you've been doing over the past year, have you found that there are particular messaging and talking points that are really effective, more so than others perhaps, when talking about the need for comprehensive flavor policies to legislators or to other non-public health stakeholders?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as much as we can focus on kids is the better for us. Sometimes, especially with e-cigarettes and menthol cigarettes, folks will say you're getting into an adult choice issue, which we want to stay away from. And as much as we can focus on, you know, this is a real problem among kids, and we've made such significant advancements in reducing youth smoking that we really don't want to regress on that with this new opportunity for youth nicotine addiction. And I think that really speaks to legislators and to everyone across the board, to community members too, is driving it back to is how much we can affect kids in this. And that, you know, we're also with a lot of flavor restrictions, the FDA has the ability for potential use of e-cigarettes as a cessation method. And we defer to that too, that we're not saying that e-cigarettes should come off the market, just that they should be under strict regulation as to their usefulness as a cessation tool. So it's what we know is that, you know, does an adult really need cotton candy e-cigarette to quit? Probably not. But is that going to bring a kid to use that product? Yes, it probably will. So keeping the focus on kids has been really effective for us.
Terrific. Thank you, Caroline, for that insight. I am seeing here that we're about 2 minutes away from our half hour ending time. So in the interest of keeping us right on time, I'm going to say thanks again to Andy and Caroline for your candid responses, and I'll turn things back over to Dawn to conclude us. So Dawn, take it away.
Thanks, Josh. The time does go by quickly. And thanks again, both Caroline and Andy, for joining us this afternoon to provide your insights on state tobacco policy developments from across the country. Just a quick reminder before we adjourn, we always like to encourage all TCN members to visit the website, which is tobaccocontrolnetwork.org, where we house numerous resources, including a member directory, an interactive tobacco policy map, and that's a really great tool that's regularly updated. You could hover over the map and see what's going on in each state. There are also archives of the TCN newsletter and past TCN resources and lots of other good stuff. So with that, this will conclude today's desk side briefing. Thank you all participants and speakers for joining us, as well as our colleagues at ASTO for making this briefing possible, and CDC OSH, the Program Services Branch, for supporting all our work. Please keep an eye out for future TCN virtual deskside briefings that will provide more insights to help the TCN membership address the many new and familiar challenges facing us all in state and territorial tobacco control. So if you have any questions or even recommendations for a future topic, we're always looking for something that's going to be useful to all of you. Please don't hesitate to reach out. The best way is an email to tcn@asto.org. And with that, thank you for joining us and enjoy the rest of your day. We will conclude.